Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is a big week around here, and that's after the trade deadline. We're going to be doing two big Maryland Crab Cake Tour stops, one at Coco's on Wednesday, and then on Friday at Peach John's in Essex. And I am wearing my Costas shirt where we were last week in Timonium. We're going to get back into Dundalk once the Queen of Rock and Roll, Gina Schott, gets back local. We're going to move the show over to Dundalk. We're going to be giving away the scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven scratch-offs, as well as our friends at GBMC putting us out on the road for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And all of you know I have a special medical procedure coming up in a few weeks. But between now and then, I'm trying to keep the football season alive. The Minnesota Vikings are awaiting the Baltimore Ravens this weekend. My pal Kevin Seifert and I have been covering sports here for about 30-something years. I don't know. 91, 92, 93. Where were you? You've just we were somewhere. It's been 30-some years, right?
Yeah, my first year in the DC Baltimore market was 95, and I started covering the Orioles in 96, so we probably ran into each other then.
Well, and you've been in Minnesota, which feels like more than a minute, probably all this century, correct?
Yeah, I left DC Baltimore in 99, and I've been here ever since, so just past the 26-year mark. Kind of crazy.
Were you in the building the night I met Billick, or did you get there right after that? Like the Randall Cunningham championship
Oh,
game, Dirty
right. No,
Bird.
I got hired the season after that. So I was Billick was already the Ravens coach when I got here to Minnesota.
Well, you've seen a lot in Minnesota through all of this, and
Yeah.
you're on JJ McCarthy watch here. Listen, I would say this, and I think you and I talked about this maybe a year or two ago when you did the show last. I found myself at the final owners' meetings before they threw me out after 26 years of doing the work that you witnessed me doing as well. But
Yeah.
I found myself at the table at the owners' meetings where the coaches all do their morning breakfast. You're familiar with this, with your coach, the new coach, Kevin O'Connell, who was the new coach then, just
Yeah.
incoming, young, fresh face, Tom Brady kind of guy, out of the Belichick system, quarterback whisperer, like all of that. I would have bet a dollar. I would have hired him as my coach. And a couple of years in, he doesn't have a pout. There's been no parade in Minnesota yet. But I just want to get a little update on that because we're getting a sniff of this week. But he's got to get the right quarterback. But his quarterback's in Seattle now, right? I mean, so it has been an interesting stop start for the Vikings. And 2 weeks ago, when Wentz couldn't lift his shoulder, I'm like, this is a gimme game. I don't know. Go beat the Lions in Detroit last week. This
Yeah.
starts to look like a much tougher game this week for the Ravens.
Yeah, you're right. He hasn't Kevin O'Connell hasn't won a Super Bowl. He hasn't won a playoff game yet. He is the reigning coach of the year for the job he did last year when Sam Darnold stepped into the lineup and led them to a 14-3 record and into the playoffs. I think I still think he's the kind of coach, if not the coach, that many NFL teams want. And certainly the quarterback aspect is crucial. They have really benefited from having the head coach be the play caller, be the top person in the building on developing quarterbacks, because every quarterback that has played here has done better than he has at anywhere else in his career, whether it's Kirk Cousins when he first took over, whether it was Josh Dobbs for a couple games in 2023, whether it was Sam Darnold last year. I don't know if Carson Wentz had his best ever performance, but certainly his best in a while, since at least when he was in kind of rolling in Philadelphia. And
That's the
so,
ultimate compliment, right? I remember the day I met Marvin Lewis in 1996. It's like, we're teachers. We try to make these
yeah,
guys better. And when they realize we can make them better, that's when we win. That's when they're really going to sit up in class and pay attention because we're going to get them paid more, right? I mean, like, just all the way along. And when you sense that, that's a place you want to be. It's like Jerry Maguire, right? Like, make me better, you know?
Right. And so you have that aspect, and that's what every NFL team wants. But the Vikings also have a culture that O'Connell is primarily responsible for implementing that is really valued by players across the league. You see how they are ranked in the NFLPA rankings of organizations that players would want to play for in terms of, the facilities, in terms of the coaching that they receive. He's very much, and I kind of describe it as a product of the millennial kind of youth sports. You know, if you've ever been around youth sports or if you ever coached youth sports, you know, it's very positive. Your coaches are encouraged to find the most positive way possible of bringing players along and having them be the best versions of themselves, and kind of the old school yelling and screaming and terrorizing and the other things that, you know, probably went on when we were kids, is not necessarily, is sort of not frowned on, or it is frowned on now. And a lot of the players in the NFL, they want to be coached hard, but they don't want to be abused in that way. And so he is very much on the other end of that. In fact, I remember the his first Kevin O'Connell's first training camp in Minnesota, a player was like, I've never been in a situation, I guess, in my entire life in football, going back to Pop Warner. It's like, when is this guy going to yell at us? When's he going to get mean? And he just isn't. He isn't that guy. There's just a lot of empathy, a lot of talking through things. He does get angry. He does raise his voice, but it's not nearly the nastiness that I think kind of you saw, you know, in football and other sports in previous generations. So I think those are the two things that people value about O'Connell, is the skills in the quarterback area, and also sort of the, you know, Gen X, Gen, or not Gen X, but millennial Gen Z kind of approach to managing people.
Kevin Seifert is our guest. He's with ESPN. He's out in Minnesota in the Twin Cities waiting and covers the league, really, and covers all sorts of issues in lots of ways over 3 decades of doing this. Seen a lot of coaches there, right? We started with Denny Green, the late, great Denny Green, but just going through any number of Zimmers and different people that have been good people, even assistants and Stefanskis that have gone on to
Mike
lead in other
Tomlin,
places. I mean, even going back to Billick, you know, being a part of that system there. And they haven't won, but they're a perennial, really good team and one of those great franchises. And I've spoken this week at length about this, that, you know, the noise in the league can be overrated and this fan base and that fan base. To me, you know, Seattle's a place to go play. I think Denver because of the altitude and because of the way the stadium is structured. But to me, the Minnesota thing might be the ultimate home field advantage in the entire league in regard to the skull thing and when the fans are breathing down on you and how offenses and cadences would work in that building anytime. It's always full. I think it's a really, really tough place to play. And I think it's a franchise that you've witnessed for 25 years try to get there, hasn't gotten there. But I think you see it as, you know, on the it won't shock you once they win a Super Bowl there, right? Like they go about things the right way, right?
I think so, for the most part. You know, their owners, the Wilf family, took over in 2005, and one of their sort of core philosophies is they believe you should compete every year, and that there should be no, you know, clearly no tanking or anything that overt or explicit, but even just like kind of taking a step back you know, take one step back so that you can eventually take two steps forward. And there are a lot of Super Bowl teams that built themselves that way. But the Wilfs have never felt like they should do that to their fan base and their customers, and have a year where you're going into it saying like they got no chance. And so they have kind of, you know, since Kevin O'Connell and the GM Kwesi Doofenshmirtz got hired in 2022, they have kind of tried to do what they call the competitive rebuild, and that is, you know, sort of overhaul the personnel while at the same time being good enough to compete for at least a playoff spot, if not the Super Bowl. And so they've been good most of those years. They had one really injury plagued year in 2023 that they did not, you know, end up with a winning record. But the Wilfs have had a top 10 winning percentage in the regular season over their tenure, but they have one of the worst playoff records as a result. And so they have never been able to field an elite team, but every year they have a team that is likely to be at least good. And so what they're trying to do now is have they tried to build a really strong team around a quarterback who had never played before in JJ McCarthy, and try to support his development in real time, which is one of the hardest things you can do in the NFL, is have a first year starter at quarterback, and someone as young as JJ. I mean, he turned 22 earlier this year. He's younger than, you know, every quarterback in the league except Jackson Dart. And while at the same time not taking a step back in the win-loss column. I mean, they entered this season expecting to compete for an NFC North title, and they have a $350 million cash payroll to back that up. And we'll see if that is eventually where they end up going. But that's sort of been the story of the Vikings over a few decades, which is, never being willing to take steps back on the field in order to build back up through the draft and high draft picks.
Well, all the years where you wonder whether you have the right quarterback or not, whether it's Cousins, whoever it was, going back to Warren Moon and Randall Cunningham, for crying out loud. With the Darnold thing and with the conviction of this coach leader in O'Connell who just believes, I've got my guy. This is my guy. I prefer 21-year-old guy over 28 or 29-year-old guy. I prefer cheap guy. I prefer pliable, unlimited ceiling, all of that. It really created some awkwardness, right? I mean, most franchises, I see the Browns play twice a year. They're trying to find one quarterback, right? I mean, the Bengals have Flacco now running around out here winning. Pittsburgh, going through Russell Wilson and, who knows who, the number of dozen guys trying to find the next Roethlisberger. It certainly, the jury's out as Darnold's playing pretty well and was a pretty high draft pick, as was Mac Jones, all these guys that are getting that second life. O'Connell's sort of, pushed his flag onto his guy who's 22 years old. I don't know what that means for this week when the Ravens come out there, but I think, hey man, I remember when Billick got fired. It was like, sort of like, your potential is going to cost me my job, and Kyle Bowler's potential, that's the way quarterbacks and coaches work.
I mean, you think about last year, they had Sam, not only Sam Darnold, but Daniel Jones in their building as well. He spent the last 6 weeks on their practice squad after the Giants signed him, and they wanted to re-sign him to be sort of their the veteran backup to JJ, but and maybe compete to start if he was if JJ had a tough training camp or a tough early part of the season. But Daniel Jones understood that he had a much better chance to be the full-time starter in Indianapolis, and that's where he went. And they also had Aaron Rodgers basically standing on their doorstep saying, "Hey, I'm happy to play for you guys for a year if you'd like." And they turned that down as well. And from the outside, you know, from a sort of a detached team building perspective, you say, "Well, if you've got this great quarterback infrastructure in your building and this great quarterback coach, and you have a choice between paying Sam Darnold, $40 million a year, or Daniel Jones, something similar to that, if you wanted him to be your starter, or paying Aaron Rodgers whatever it was going to take, or and you have the chance to put a young guy out there who's in this rookie contract for the next at least 2 more years, if not longer, and then allows you to build a stronger team around him, and you feel strong enough about your infrastructure that you can bring him along to the extent that you're not going to take a step back from a competitive standpoint, then that makes sense. But that has put an enormous amount of pressure on Kevin O'Connell to deliver, and it's easier said than done. He's helped some veteran quarterbacks elevate themselves, but he has yet to, he hasn't been in a position yet to develop a quarterback from day one yet, and so that part of it is still very much in progress. And so, if you have, it's almost the kind of deal where you have a lot of great accomplishments, and that raises the expectations that you can work it with anybody. And we'll find out eventually if that's the case with JJ McCarthy.
Kevin Seifert is my guest. He's my longtime friend and NFL insider for the worldwide leader in ESPN in the Twin Cities. The Ravens will be out in Minnesota trying to keep this thing on the road, keep the momentum going on the Ravens side. Update me on the Vikings, dude. I watched most of the Carson Wentz pain game a couple of weeks ago. I felt for him. I've always kind of rooted for him. I like guys that went to North Dakota State, came in sideways, and led the Eagles to somewhere and never got there. So I'm always sort of on that team, and I sort of like the Vikings, just always, kind of pulling for your people up there. I know a lot of people in Minnesota. I'd like to see you get a parade, let's say before Cleveland does or some other places. I would say for me on the outside, I looked at it like 3 weeks ago, even when the Ravens stunk and Lamar wasn't on the field and they're running around with Snoop Huntley. I'm like, hey, Vikings, like no quarterback, everybody's banged up, hard to win. I don't think it's going to cost O'Connell his job, but I'm like, it's going to cost him a season. And certainly this decision to walk away from a veteran guy who was doing it, if it goes not so good this year, 7-10 or something like that. I don't know where that is with the fan base or with the sponsorship or with the community in regard to your point, sort of kind of punting on a season and saying being okay and saying we're getting a system together. You know, that's not what they're doing in Green Bay with a young quarterback. That's not what they're, you know, that's not what they're doing in Detroit, where they're taking winning seriously for the first time since Plimpton, right? You know, so I, but I would also say 2 weeks ago, I looked at this and said, not going well. I tell you what, you're always a week away, right? A week and a half ago, the Ravens were 1-5. Now they're 3-5 with a bullet, and they're favored to win in Minnesota, which it got me scratching my head, like, I haven't seen the Ravens look great against anybody, let alone Miami, at all. But I see this pathway for the Ravens to get the 10 victories and get the 500, be 7-7. Like, I'm not a quitter on any of these teams, but the quarterback's got to show up. Where are you with the Vikings right now? Because it feels like all these pieces, we only really talk about the quarterback there.
And so, like I said earlier, their goal was to come into this season with a strong enough team around JJ McCarthy that they could support him, having some ups and some and a lot of downs, like a lot of young quarterbacks are going to have, and still be competitive. And they never really got a chance to find out if they had that. They've had injuries across the board, starting, really in training camp. I think until this game against Detroit, they still haven't had their top five offensive linemen on the field altogether for one single snap all year. They had four of the five against Detroit for the first time, and but they've had injuries on both sides of the ball. They had this really tough opening schedule where they had two, straight primetime games, and then they went to Europe. They were in Dublin against the Steelers, and then stayed over there to play the Browns the following week. And that was a really, I think they thought maybe that would neutralize the home field advantage that those teams had, and they barely escaped without getting swept. They had to come back against the Browns on the last drive to just to split that. So that was a very arduous time. Then they had their bye week, and then they started what was really the most difficult remaining schedule in the entire NFL, against Philadelphia, and lost to Philadelphia, and then had a short week and lost to the Chargers. And then, so I think I went into that Lions game saying, like, this just feels like a cursed year.
It's falling apart, right? Like,
Falling
literally,
apart. Like,
yeah.
there's too many older veterans that are just going to be getting hurt, but they all got healthy for that game. Like I said, they had the four of the five offensive linemen. Andrew Van Ginkle, who's this really underrated defensive playmaker, was back for the first time since week three, I think. And he had a big impact. Their special teams came out of nowhere and had a huge impact with block kick and a bunch of long returns by their rookie returner. And so a ton of stuff came together in a way against Detroit that had never, I mean, they hadn't beaten those guys since 2022, and they hadn't won at Ford Field since maybe not even the cent in this decade. And so many things came together that were unexpected in that game. And people, the NFL is such that you get so excited by one game, you're like, okay, this is the way they're going to play every week, and look out Ravens, look out Packers, look out Bears, look out everybody. And it's still very much a team with a very young and inexperienced quarterback and a bunch of veterans who have struggled to stay healthy, happen to be healthy right now. But even then, Aaron Jones, the running back, had a shoulder injury against the Lions, and he's 30 years old, and he may or may not be ready for this game. And so it's just gonna, excuse me, it's just gonna be a balancing act with the health of these veteran players. But that's kind of where they're at, and I'm sure they would have preferred Lamar Jackson to spend a couple extra weeks making sure that hamstring is good to go, but I guess he is now officially back after that game in Miami, and so they'll have to contend with that. They struggled to keep Caleb Williams in the pocket in week one, and I know Lamar is more than just running, but like that would seem to be something that could be open to him against this particular defense.
He hasn't been doing as much of that. I
No, he
mean,
hasn't.
really hasn't been.
And so maybe, but Kevin O'Connell said this week is like the thing you got to remember about him is how developed he's become as a thrower. He's not just, athlete guy. He very much has Kevin O'Connell's attention and respect as a passer, and that does not come lightly given Kevin's background. And so, I look at this as I looked at this game the same way you were a couple weeks ago, thinking, well, this is going to be one of many games that they're going to struggle in to compete, and they might. That might be the case. You can't just say a team has turned a corner based on one game. but
Well, the
they.
lines are terrible here, right? Like, so when it comes to protecting Lamar in a pass set, struggled. Coming to running the ball, they've struggled. Getting after the quarterback, they've struggled. Stopping the run against the stout offensive line, doesn't matter who the running back is, they've struggled. So that has been point of attack. They have gotten beaten. I mean, I don't know what the stats in next gen would say about all that, but I bet they've been getting beat at the line of scrimmage like two-thirds of the time through the course of the game on both sides of the ball, which way the line was moving once the ball was snapped. And it is it's been really problematic because they're just not built well in their core either way. And to me, confusing a young quarterback, getting pressure on a young quarterback, that's really the key. That really is the competitive advantage against a young quarterback, let alone an intimidation factor or confusion in the back end to pick them off. But the pressure on a young quarterback's really the issue. And I don't know if the Ravens are going to get that this week or any week.
And the great thing for JJ McCarthy is that he has these really elite set of receivers and the tight end TJ Hockenson as well, that if he throws it anywhere near them, they're going to catch it. Justin Jefferson had this great one-handed catch on a fade route in the end zone against the Lions that, probably wasn't thrown the way you'd want to throw a fade, but he just kind of rifled it 100 miles an hour and Justin caught it. Jordan Addison made a great adjustment on a deep pass to come back to the ball that was underthrown, and they made a big play that way. TJ Hockenson caught a pass in the end zone that, again, JJ, as a young quarterback, is throwing it 100 miles an hour every time, and I think it got to him quicker than he thought, but he managed to catch it. And so the advantage that JJ McCarthy has, and this was the idea when they built this team, is that he doesn't have to be layering balls, 27 yards downfield. In a perfect spot, like an Aaron Rodgers in his prime or whoever, to get completions. He just has to give these guys chances, and that's what they're telling him to do. They're not putting him in many. He's not even had 30 attempts in a game. They're keeping it the three starts he's had. They're keeping it as basic as they can, and letting those playmakers do the rest. And so I think, whether they get pressure on him or not, JJ will have options. To give guys chances to make plays, and they've made enough of those against the Lions to pull out the win.
Do you see the optimism in him that the head coach does, Kevin?
And JJ,
Yeah.
right. He's just the relent. Like I had seen him at Michigan, and you saw a lot of this like relentless positivity and the energy, and you're thinking, oh, that's the way college players are. Like that, I get it. But he'll tone it down in the NFL, and he hasn't. Like he's still that guy who's like, dapping up every single guy on the sidelines, between every series, and like every motivational quote you can imagine that he is regurgitating, and just always smiling, and always seems to, be trying to find the joy in whatever he's doing. And there's something to be said for that. Like I think the one thing that he's proved is that he can kind of garner that energy and take himself to another level in these crucial moments at the end of games. And you saw he had counted for three touchdowns in the fourth quarter in week one against Chicago, and that's how they came back to win. And then the other day in Detroit, they have a third and five. If they make it, they win the game. That there's no more. Not, they're gonna be able to run the clock out by kneeling, and it's third and five, and O'Connell calls a pass. He doesn't say like, let's run and play defense, and he calls a pass, and it's not a simple one. He throws a 16-yard back shoulder fade to their number three receiver, and the guy was able to catch it. A great catch, again, giving a guy a chance to make a play. But there's something about that his demeanor and his experience, maybe as in the Big Ten, that. And throughout his high school career as well, where he like the moment doesn't get too big, and if he's nervous, it certainly doesn't play out in his personality or in the way he plays. Like he's had some of his best plays in the most important moments of the games that he's played.
Kevin Seifert is here. He is in the Twin Cities covering the Minnesota Vikings and hanging out. And for 30 years now, we've known each other. And here we go again, Ravens. I keep all my friends close. I mean, it used to be a Rolodex. Now I just text you guys out and say, let's talk some football here this week. But from a Ravens perspective, looking outward to a guy like you that really does cover the league, not just the Vikings, what do you make of the mess here? Harbaugh lying at press conferences, getting the Bears all stirred up, moving the point spreads more than the Mafia could, 5 points on a Saturday, getting a slap on the wrist as an organization, lying about, well, I didn't know, honest mistake. I mean, he's a Harbaugh. There are no honest mistakes. Speaking of your quarterback out there in the Michigan, ties to all of that. But just the shenanigans of different things that go on in the league. But more than that, the largesse of Lamar, the expectations of the Ravens, you look up, I look up, we all look up. They're 1-5. They're digging out from this. This is a playoff game for them this week. I mean, a six loss would crush them. And I think the national media, I saw Cowher digging in for them the other day, just sort of like, they're the Ravens. They're just going to dig out of this and go 9-2, and that's what they do. Man, I don't sense that they're that team. I don't see Marshall Yanda and a healthy Ronnie Stanley and a healthy Matt Ibike and a younger Roquan Smith and a healthy Marlon Humphrey. I mean, they've got a lot of question marks about whether they're more like a, 9-8 team than they are that 15-2 team. Everybody still kind of thinks they are making them a favor coming into Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a generational quarterback, you have the highest expectations for that team, no matter what else is around him. The same with in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. That you could argue this is not really one of his best teams, but people still enter the year saying, "Oh yeah, the Chiefs are going to win it," and so we'll see if they even make the playoffs. I think people look at the Ravens and give them nationally and probably give them the benefit of the doubt in the sense that they've often figured out how to get out of maybe not this severe of a mess in terms of 1-5, but they have found ways to over the course of seasons put themselves in competitive spots and at least in position to make deep playoff runs, even if they haven't executed on those to the fullest extent. And so, I think, and there's been some times over the course of I don't have every year of the Harbaugh tenure in my head, but like I know there's been some ups and the downs, and so. But I think the bigger thing is
A lot of
that,
ups, though. I mean, they've only
lots of
had
ups.
one really bad year was the year Flacco's knee in 15. So, I mean, fans are like spoiled to like anything less than a 12 or an 11, is like unacceptable or crazy or whatever. Wait, the fans have been leaving at halftime, booing the coach. The
Really?
stadium's been empty. It's been a really weird level of expectation, and they haven't won the Super Bowl in 12 years, 13 years, So
Yeah,
that's part of it, too.
and so what I was I was say was, when you think about it, you look at it from the outside and you just try to put it in the context of recent football, you think of like Andy Reid in Philadelphia, like had a, which is where John Harbaugh came from before he, started in Baltimore. And, Andy Reid had a wildly successful run in Philadelphia. They didn't win the Super Bowl, as the Ravens have, but it was wildly successful. And they just kind of, eventually they got to a point where they said, like, I think everybody would be in good, it would be good for everyone to kind of go their separate ways. It's not a firing, it's not a resignation. It's just like, there's a time limit for every, tenure in the NFL.
Even Belichick.
Even Belichick, but it can go on longer when you've won one or more Super Bowls. And I'm not at all suggesting this in the case of the Ravens, but it's just something, and John Harbaugh, but it's just something you think about. Like, it's not, nothing's forever. And so you wonder, like, you have a dip like this, as you say, it doesn't happen very often. You say, like, are they getting closer to that?
Well, they
Or,
want to throw Tomlin
or,
out of Pittsburgh, and he gets a 41-year-old
yeah.
quarterback that you guys didn't even want. Nobody
Yeah.
wanted. Nobody wanted to deal with him. And you look up, and you're like, well, I mean, better than anything else that they've put out there in recent years. And same thing could be said for Flacco in regard to Burrow.
Yeah.
That it is kind of amazing the difference it can make. And that would be the question mark, I guess, for every organization to say, do you have the right quarterback? Can you keep him upright? And are you doing the things
Yeah.
around him to give him a chance to be successful? I mean, the Ravens and the Steelers with their leadership, and Marvin even before that with two quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
Andy Dalton, he made it work with Andy Dalton, right?
Yeah.
So I would just say there's been such stability in a lot of places. I mean, you talk about Philadelphia, but New Orleans with Peyton and now what he's doing in Denver and even Pete Carroll and what he did in Seattle. There's really something to be said, and I think your organization felt that way about Mike Zimmer, even though he never climbed up the mountain. Mike Zimmer's a good man.
Yeah, for sure. And so again, I'm not suggesting that the John Harbaugh tenure should be coming to an end by any stretch, but in the biggest picture possible, you say, You have this generational quarterback, haven't yet won a Super Bowl with him. What are the parameters that why has that not happened yet? And what needs to change before the clock starts ticking on Lamar Jackson? Again, nothing's forever. He's young. He's still, a great player. And you mentioned he's not running as much, but I don't think there's any lack of effectiveness or any drop in effectiveness, certainly with Lamar Jackson, but it's not indefinite. And you don't want to get to the end of his tenure where whenever that's going to be and say, he was a Hall of Fame quarterback that we never even got to the Super Bowl with. And so those are the questions that I'm sure the Ravens are thinking about and asking themselves. And to me, when I look at them from the outside, those are the same questions. It's like they've been so good with him, but they just haven't taken that final step. What's it going to take before it's not possible anymore?
I'm going to ask you this not on behalf of ESPN Bet or the gambling community or the National Football League, but the shenanigans here last week. I think a lot of people were shocked that the Ravens didn't get a draft pick taken away
Yeah.
just to say, like, this can't be happening. The old boy network of, well, I'm, you know, the don't tell anybody, but my quarterback's got the flu or whatever is going on that would cause hokey pokey with Joe the bookmaker. We're now into the on the up and up system, and that's a really difficult thing, as the NBA is finding, as all of these sports are going to find out, especially at the lower levels of colleges, which is really disturbing. What it would take to throw a game or shave a point. That the NFL, I just found that to be one of those things that everybody in the league's looking at and saying, whoa, 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 whoa. There's, we can't play the gamesmanship role anymore. I didn't know the rules.
Yeah, I mean those rules are not like a secret. They're written down and in a handbook, and every NFL team has them. So like I don't know a lot of the details, and I actually thought that the NFL would make an example of them, regardless of whatever they in their investigation found happened or
Sort of a
didn't.
textbook of what you can't do. The best player in the sport,
Yeah.
two-time MVP,
Yeah.
coming off an injury, you're going
Yeah.
to bullshit everybody right on up to the bitter end, right
Yeah.
on through the gamblers, right on into Saturday afternoon. Like,
Well,
no, hard no, hard
yeah.
stop. That's not cool. Like, I thought that's the way Goodell would look at it. And honestly, that's the way I thought every other owner, head coach, just saying, oh, it's the Harbaughs doing what they do. Cheat, lie. Like, no.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that, right? I
Yeah.
mean,
Yeah. I will say that, like, and take it for what it's worth, like, I've talked to a lot of people around the league who I don't want to say we're scared by it, but we're like, it caught their attention that, oh, yes, we're now in the time, where you can't, whether this was an honest mistake or not, where you can't have honest mistakes anymore. Like, you have to, everything has to be buttoned up, everything has been tightened up. If it means pulling in your team lawyer to talk about the injury report to make sure that you're correctly interpreting the wording of every all the bylaws and
and they
all
have
the
such things,
yeah,
trust
right.
me.
Everybody has that. Yeah. And so like I do sense that there has been a tightening up, at least an attention drawn and a tightening up of the process of the injury reports that maybe didn't exist before. There was
Well, you send a memorandum and say it's 100 grand this time, it'll be the death penalty next time.
Yeah.
That doesn't really. $100,000 fine was laughable.
Yeah.
It was literally like a
Yeah,
parking ticket,
the
you know?
Ravens, maybe the Ravens were the fortunate guinea pigs there, and they were the first ones to get to make to have that happen. But I will say, like, it's not like people looked at that and said, well, I guess it's okay to mess around with the injury report and do whatever we want to do with it because they only got the 100,000. Like, I think people's attention has been caught, and we'll only know for sure the next time, and there will be a next time, and when the next time it happens, what the punishment is then. But I do think that there's I have just noticed, just anecdotally on my own, that like there's been a tightening up of the way these things are happening that wasn't previously in place.
Well, I mean, bookmakers used to come to people like you and me trying to get inside information about stuff like that and offering money and like all of those awful things that everybody in the league tried to stay away from until they planted a team in Vegas and turned on an app and
Yeah.
everywhere. And I just think it's these are the dangers. And listen, I've never bet on it. I'm pretty on the up and up. I can't even discuss the game in that way. I can only discuss the game the way we've been discussing it for X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's. And I can get into a little bit of the off-field drama and who did what in jurisprudence. But, by and large, when you spend the time in the game, you understand how hard the game is to win, even when you have good, healthy players,
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's part of the landscape of sports now. So like I'm in the same boat. Like I certainly don't bet on anything because I'm too cheap. But I'm well aware that it's a big part of the landscape and something we have to cover and think about and talk about.
Is that Spurgeon Wins a nameplate that you have behind you? I
I
see it.
forgot to take that down, but yes, it is. He actually, funny, you should notice that he was the starter against the Ravens. I think it was the only game, well, maybe one of a couple games he started in his career, but at the end of the 2001 season,
For the Cleveland Browns, yes, I'm
well,
aware.
well for the Vi but the he was on the Vikings at the end of the 2001 season, and Denny Green got fired with one game left, and Mike Tice became the interim coach. The last game of the year was in Baltimore because it had been rescheduled from 9/11. And it was a night game, and I'm pretty sure Spurgeon Wynn started that game for the
He
Vikings.
he started he st there is a I was in Albuquerque for the Great Balloon Fiesta, and I bring that up because you have children. It's one of the great things I've ever done in my life. It's always been in football season, so I've never been able to do it. So my thanks to Chad Steele for throwing me out because it allowed me to go to Albuquerque and see Paul McCartney and see the Balloon Festival as well. And I just lost control. I'm in the hotel at 4 in the morning, and the Baltimore Bullies. ESPN. There you go. ESPN. Kevin Seifert. I'm plugging the Baltimore Bullies for you. There's a scene in there where Rob Burnett just it's the most vicious. I mean, it would have gotten you 15 yards, an envelope from the commissioner at this point. But Spurgeon Wynn was like thrown to the wolves of the Baltimore Bullies that year. So when I saw Wynn there, I'm like, that's like Steve Wynn in Vegas. And I saw the thing. I'm like, that's a nameplate. It's got to be Spurgeon Wynn. So who else can come on and room rate your room with Spurgeon
You're
Wynn,
the
who
only
was
guy, man.
sacked
I
by Rob
appreciate it.
Burnett?
I underestimated you. Normally I put that down so that it doesn't show up in the Zoom, but I underestimated your observational abilities. Well done.
Well, I tell you what. Hey, last question is most important. Everybody in the Twin Cities, did you ever meet Prince? I feel like everybody in Minnesota must have met Prince one time. Did you ever meet Prince?
No, and it's wild because I live near Paisley Park. Paisley Park, when he built Paisley Park, it was in the middle of nowhere, like way out, not even suburbs. It was just in the middle, and he wanted to be in the middle of nowhere, and urban sprawl. Eventually, it became part of a suburb, and so like people that I in my neighborhood would see him at the local Walgreens or CVS or Target or
I
whatever.
figured, right? I
Yeah, and
figured.
I never did, but I drive by Paisley Park all the time, going to Costco or going to, Target or whatever. It's right there. And so it's wild that I never did, quote unquote, run into him. He used to have word of mouth midnight concerts at Paisley Park that I could have not walked to, but I could have gotten there pretty easily if they had happened once I moved out this way. But no, but he but I see Paisley Park all the time. It's now a museum. People go tour it. I've been in there. It's a great tour if you're at all
I
interested in
haven't done it
history.
yet, but I want to.
Yeah, it's do it in advance. It's a smaller building, so I don't think they can get a ton of people through it.
I've never been to Graceland, but I want to go to Paisley Park.
I haven't been to Graceland, but if I had to pick one of the two, I would pick Paisley Park for sure.
Kevin Seifert is here. So I never met Prince, but I did get held up out of. You remember when he played that little media event in Miami
Oh,
at Miami Beach? My wife and I were there covering, doing Radio Row as we did for 30 years, and we got in the front row and we watched him play
I
Johnny
was
B.
in the front
Goode.
row too.
My wife caught his pick. It was exceedingly loud. My wife still has his pick, and when we left, he was wearing an orange jumpsuit thing, right? The little men's room off to the right on in the convention center. I went to go pee. And there were like three dudes like standing in front like this and like can't go in there yet. And I'm like, I'm thinking, we're in the, it could be anybody. It could be, it could be Lawrence Taylor in the back. It could be, it was a Super Bowl. It could be anybody, right? Could have been Gloria Estefan. Could have been anybody, but it was Prince. And he came out and he gave the nod to his guys. But I mean, I was 1 foot from Prince at the men's room door at the Miami Beach Convention Center. We caught his pick. So that's the best I got. That's all I got from Prince. I don't have like a Sid Hartman story or anything like
Oh yeah,
that, you
Sid.
know?
Yeah, Sid. That was where Sid met him in the in the green room, and they had a little talk. Prince was a huge sport. He played high school basketball at one of the same high school that Sid Hartman went to, different time. But and he was all and there was a stretch where he was always in the front row at Timberwolves games, and so he was a big basketball guy. And I think Sid and him caught up on that. But yeah, a legendary Minnesotan for sure.
Yeah, see, I got it all in this week. All right, we don't play you guys every 4 years, I guess, at this point, man. And I hope Dublin was fun for you over there, man.
It was a great trip. I had never been there, and it was awesome that work gave me a reason to go there. So it was nice to see a different part of the world.
Go to the Temple Bar, you go up top of the Guinness Factory, you look over the city.
Exactly.
Have a proper pint. He is Kevin Seifert. He covers the Minnesota Vikings properly and has for a generation. He's been my friend for even a minute longer than that when he was here in the Baltimore, Washington area, catching up with the Orioles and others as well. You can catch his work at ESPN. You can catch me at Coco's on Wednesday. You can catch us at Pizza John's on Friday, talk a little baseball. I think Luke's going to come out. We will have scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery to give away as well, the Raven scratch-offs. I'm going to be getting those scented candy cane scented ones for next month. But in the meantime, it's baseball, it's football. We have a new manager, and we have the Minnesota Vikings this week. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.